Welcome, everyone. Hi, I'm Pat.
And hi, I'm Jesse.
We've all had that feeling, right? That gut-wrenching moment when someone else's mistake, maybe even a big failure, just seems to sort of evaporate off them and land right on you.
It feels awful.
It really does. It's more than just being accused. It feels like a real violation, leaves you feeling confused and, frankly, unfairly burdened.
Absolutely.
So today, we're taking a deep dive into exactly that, this complex thing called blame shifting. We're going to unpack, you know, what it really is, why people do it, which is fascinating how you can spot it, because it can be sneaky.
Very sneaky sometimes.
Yeah. And most importantly, how you can navigate it, how you can sort of protect yourself and aim for healthier relationships. It's a big topic, but we'll take our time, go through the sources like we're just talking it through.
Exactly. And it's not just about, you know, pointing fingers back. It's about understanding a deeper psychological pattern, something that often happens just below the surface. And getting that understanding, well, that's really key.
Okay, so let's start broad. What exactly is blame shifting? I mean, at its heart.
Well, sources like MentalZone and Psychology Today define it pretty clearly. It's essentially when someone takes the responsibility for their own stuff, their actions, their mistakes, their failures, and puts it on to someone else.
Right.
And the really crucial thing to grasp, I think, is that it's rarely about you, the person being blamed. It's almost always about the person doing the blaming, trying to dodge their own discomfort, you know, the guilt, the shame. They just want it gone.
So it's an avoidance tactic.
Precisely. And our sources stress this isn't just like an accidental comment. It's actually seen as a specific type of verbal abuse.
Wow. Okay. Verbal abuse.
Yeah. It's manipulative, often quite covert, hidden. It's designed not just to let them off the hook, but to actually sometimes subtly, sometimes not so subtly, transfer that negative feeling, the guilt, the shame, onto you instead.
And that covert part, that's what makes it so tricky, isn't it? It's not always someone shouting, it's your fault.
Not at all.
So how else does it show up? What are those sneakier ways it gets into conversations?
That's a great point. Because it does creep in. It can be sarcasm, you know.
Yeah.
That comment that sounds like a joke but still stings.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe just intense defensiveness. Anytime you try to bring up their part in something, it's just immediate pushback. Walls go up.
Okay.
One of our sources, Danielle Setzi Therapy, mentions things like guilt tripping too. Or the silent treatment. That's a really powerful, controlling way to shift blame without saying a word.
Right. The cold shoulder.
Exactly. Or those passive-aggressive comments that just leave you wondering, wait, what did they mean by that? But the common thread, whatever the method, is always that attempt to dodge accountability.
It all comes back to avoiding responsibility, which, okay, leads to the next big question. Why? Why do people do this? What's driving this kind of damaging behavior?
Well, fundamentally, it often comes down to being a psychological defense mechanism, almost like an automatic reaction.
Yeah.
Think of it like an emotional hot potato.
Mm.
Our sources, Psychology Today, for instance, talk about projection. People essentially take their own uncomfortable feelings, maybe insecurities, shame, guilt, and they just kind of throw them onto someone else. Because holding on to them feels too painful.
Wow.
It's a way to protect their ego, you know, from facing those really negative emotions head on.
That hot potato analogy really works. And the sources give this like really clear example that makes sense. A partner in a relationship might be having their own thoughts about cheating. But instead of dealing with that internal conflict, that guilt, they project it outwards. They suddenly start accusing you of wanting to cheat on them.
Exactly. It externalizes their internal mess, basically making you carry the weight they can't handle themselves.
It's kind of mind-bending when you think about it that way.
It is.
Yeah.
And interestingly, research also connects this to difficulties with what psychologists call emotion regulation.
Emotion regulation. So like managing feelings.
Pretty much. It's about someone's struggle to process and cope with difficult emotions inside themselves. Studies show that people who struggle with this, when they feel bad, angry, ashamed, whatever, they're more likely to blame someone else for their own poor choices.
Okay.
And here's the kicker. According to Psychology Today, doing that, the blaming, it actually lessens their own negative feelings in the moment. It's like a temporary fix, a release valve, even though it's obviously not healthy long term.
So it sort of reinforces itself because it offers temporary relief.
You got it. It becomes this cycle. And speaking of cycles and learned behavior, our sources also really highlight the connection to early life, childhood experiences. Writers like Mary Jo Rapini and outlets like Psych Central suggest it often grows out of deep-seated trauma or just significant emotional upheaval growing up. Avoiding blame might have become a necessary survival skill, unfortunately.
How does that work in families?
Well, in families with, let's say, dysfunctional dynamics, sometimes kids are expected to handle adult responsibilities way too early, or they're expected to fix adult problems like, you know, parents drinking or job loss.
Things they have no control over.
Exactly. And then they get blamed for those very things they couldn't possibly control. It teaches this powerful, ingrained lesson. Blame is dangerous. Avoid it at all costs.
There was that story from Danielle in one of the sources. That really stuck with me.
Oh, yeah, the one in Psychology Today. Her father, right?
Yeah. He blamed everyone else for everything. The hot water heater breaks. It's because she showered too long, or her mom did too much laundry. The screen door's broken. Her brother did a piss-poor job fixing it.
That's almost comical but sad.
It is. But she said she and her brother were kind of lucky because it was so constant, so obviously not about them, that they learned pretty quickly just to let it roll off. They knew it was his pattern, not their fault.
It's a strange silver lining, isn't it? When it's that blatant, it can sometimes make it easier not to internalize. But linking this back, it's not just about avoiding feeling bad. It's also tied up with power and control. One source actually used the phrase, it gives the abuser a rush of power. Watching someone else get flustered or upset by the undeserved blame, it's a way to dominate the interaction, the relationship's emotional climate.
Okay, that adds another layer. So we've got a handle on what it is and some of the deep reasons why it happens. Let's shift now to spotting it, because like you said, it can be really subtle when you're actually in it. What are some key red flags in relationships?
One of the biggest and maybe most damaging is when your feelings get minimized or invalidated.
Okay, like how?
Like you calmly say, hey, that hurt my feelings. And their response is something like, oh, you're just too sensitive, or you're crazy, hysterical. Can't you take a joke? Sources like Psychology Today and even folks on Reddit discussing this point out that this completely shifts the focus. It makes your reaction the problem, not their behavior that caused it. Your valid feelings just get brushed aside.
That example from the TikTok source with Clara and Alex, that felt so real.
Tell me about it.
Claire tries to talk about her feelings being dismissed, and Alex just looks up from his phone, annoyed, like, here we go again, always making a big deal out of nothing.
Classic dismissal.
And when she pushes back a bit, he just doubles down. You're so sensitive. Take everything too personally. You can just feel her sinking right now. He completely sidestepped her actual concern.
Totally. Another huge red flag is when you find yourselves arguing about the argument.
Arguing about the argument? What's that?
It's when, instead of talking about the actual issue, maybe why they were late or said something hurtful, the whole conversation gets derailed into being about your tone of voice.
Oh.
Or they accuse you of playing the victim, or maybe even gaslighting them. The Reddit source mentioned this. It skillfully shifts the focus away from their accountability, forcing you onto the defensive about something totally different.
That's exhausting. Then there was that other tactic, the stink bomb. That sounds intense.
It is intense. It's described as sort of a desperate last-ditch move. Usually when the person feels cornered, like they've been caught red-handed, they suddenly throw out this completely wild, baseless, awful accusation, something totally out of the blue, like you abused me or you cheated on me, even if it makes no sense.
Whoa.
Yeah. So you came in thinking you had a clear point and bam, suddenly you're scrambling to defend yourself against these crazy claims. Mm-hmm. It's pure chaotic deflection. Gets the heat right off them.
Wow. And then of course there's the classic, you made me do it.
You made me yell. You ruined the day because you, whatever. The abuser basically says their bad behavior was your fault. Even apologies could be twisted this way. Like, I'm sorry I yelled, but if you hadn't pushed my buttons, that but cancels everything out.
Yeah.
The Reddit source was very clear. That's not a real apology. It still dodges taking full responsibility.
It really does sound like walking on eggshells. And the sources also linked this to control, didn't they? Like codependency.
Yes. The Gottman Institute talks about this. Sometimes the person being blamed might fall into controlling behaviors themselves, often from a place of codependency.
How so?
Like trying to manage their partner's feelings or choices, maybe doing things for them that they should do themselves, enabling bad behavior, making threats they don't follow through on. It often comes from this mistaken belief that we can somehow change another person if we just try hard enough.
Which we really can't if they don't want to change themselves.
Exactly. It also shows up in what some call protest behaviors, things like giving the silent treatment or threatening to leave just to get a reaction. Or making your partner feel like they are solely responsible for your happiness. You need to make me feel better. All these things, as Mendelsohn points out, feed into this really toxic cycle. Blame shifting creates emotional irresponsibility, which breeds resentment, distrust, distance. It's just damaging all around. The person on the receiving end often feels perpetually anxious, like they're walking on eggshells.
And it's not just personal relationships, right? This happens at work, too.
Oh, absolutely. Worklife.news talked about this. People blaming colleagues for their mistakes, maybe gossiping or undermining someone to leadership, even setting someone up to fail. It really poisons the workplace environment.
Yeah, that makes sense. And there was that term blame blindness.
Right. That's fascinating. Is where people can easily see when they're being blamed unfairly, but they're completely oblivious to when they do it to others. There was a study mentioned where like almost 2/3 of people felt they'd been thrown under the bus at work, but around 70% said they'd never done that to anyone else.
That's a huge disconnect.
It really is. It shows how ingrained and unconscious this can be and how it creates these toxic cultures where no one trusts each other.
Okay, so knowing all this, understanding the what and the why and the how, let's talk about moving forward. How do we deal with this? If you're the one being blamed, does understanding the why, like that it's a defense mechanism, coming from vulnerability, does that actually help?
It can,
yeah.
Psychology Today suggests that understanding it's likely not personal, even though it feels personal, can help you detach a bit emotionally. It can help you not absorb the blame quite so readily. But, and this is crucial, understanding why they do it absolutely does not excuse the behavior.
Right. Understanding isn't excusing. That's vital.
Totally. It's about protecting your own mental health in the situation. So what can you actually do if you're on the receiving end?
Yeah. What are the strategies?
Well, one powerful first step is to recognize the pattern itself as the problem, not necessarily your partner or colleague. Kyle Benson, a relationship expert, suggests actually naming the cycle when it happens. Maybe you mentally call it the blame game. Having a name for it creates this cue, like, oh, here we go again, which can help you choose to disengage from the game rather than getting sucked in. You're fighting the pattern, not the person.
I like that, naming it. So when you feel that blame coming your way, or even if you feel tempted to blame someone else, what then?
Pause. Just take a breath. And ask yourself, what's the vulnerable feeling underneath this?
Yeah.
Is it fear? Hurt? Feeling rejected? Danielle Sethi therapy really emphasizes that our emotions are signals. They're telling us about our needs. Getting in touch with that deeper feeling, whether it's yours or trying to guess what's driving the other person, is a huge step towards breaking the cycle.
Okay, pause and reflect. What else?
Focus on what you can control. This is huge. The Gottman Institute recommends actually listing it out.
Yeah.
What's in my sphere of control? My actions, my reactions, my words, setting boundaries, how I spend my time. And what's not in my control? Other people's actions, their feelings, their choices, their relationships.
Yeah.
Letting go of that illusion that you can control others frees up so much mental energy. You put your focus where it can actually make a difference on yourself.
And communication tools. Is there a better way to talk about things?
Definitely. I statements are a classic for a reason. Boston University's resources explain this well. Using I feel statements helps you express your concerns and needs without sounding accusatory.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Instead of, you always yell at the kids, stop it, which is guaranteed to trigger defensiveness. You could try, when you yell at the kids, I feel angry because I need the kids to be treated with respect. I would prefer that you didn't raise your voice like that. See the difference? It's focused on your experience and your need.
Yeah, it sounds much less like an attack.
Exactly. And Danielle Sethi therapy adds a nice nuance. Try phrasing needs as, I am longing to feel X, instead of, I need you to do Y. Like, I'm longing to feel safe, rather than, I need you to stop yelling. It can soften the perceived criticism even more.
That's helpful. What about boundaries? That seems critical here.
Absolutely critical. The Gottman Institute points out that resentment often builds up when boundaries, especially unspoken ones, get crossed repeatedly. So you need to get clear on your boundaries, learn to say no, and this is the hard part, be prepared to enforce them.
Meaning,
if you say, if you continue to do the blaming behavior, I will leave the room in the conversation. You have to actually do that if the behavior continues. Otherwise, your boundaries are just suggestions, not real limits.
Okay. That takes strength.
It does. And alongside that, develop ways to self-soothe. Learn how to manage your own distress when things get tense, rather than relying on your partner to fix your feelings. Building that emotional resilience makes you less vulnerable to their emotional state.
And what about, what if the person just won't change?
That's a tough reality. Sources like Gottman and Mary Jo Rapini are quite direct about this. If someone consistently shows or even tells you they're unwilling to work on the issue, you need to believe them.
Wow. Believe them.
Yeah. And then you have to honestly ask yourself, can I be happy in this relationship exactly as it is? Because you cannot force someone else to heal or change if they don't want to. Your power lies in managing your reactions and deciding what's acceptable for you.
That's a really sobering, important point. Now, what about if someone listening recognizes themselves as the blame shifter or wants to help someone who is?
Well, the good news is change is possible. Learning better ways to regulate emotions is key, as Psychology Today mentioned. If you can manage your own difficult feelings internally, the need to project them decreases.
And therapy seems like a big one here.
Huge. Often the first and hardest step, but so important. Pretty much all our sources, Rapini, Psychology Today, Mentals On, highlight that professional help is often essential to get at the root causes of these patterns. It takes courage, but it's the most effective route for real change.
Any other tools?
Journaling can be surprisingly powerful. Some Reddit users mentioned how writing things down helped them see patterns of their own behavior that they'd previously minimized or forgotten. It brings it out into the open, makes it harder to deny.
Right. Makes sense. And quickly, back to the workplace. Any solutions there?
For organizations, the key seems to be fostering a culture of openness and accountability. WorkLife.News had that great quote, "Sunlight is the best disinfectant," meaning transparency and honest communication can really reduce the kind of backbiting and blame that thrives in secrecy. Leaders need to actively model and reward accountability, not punish vulnerability. That makes a huge difference.
So wrapping this up, it feels like understanding blame shifting, whether we see it in others or ourselves at work or at home, it's really about digging deeper, isn't it?
It really is. It's not just labeling bad behavior. It's about recognizing the fears, the vulnerabilities, the learned patterns underneath it all. And when you have that understanding, you have more choices. You can choose responses that lead towards health and growth rather than just staying stuck in that painful cycle.
Absolutely. That journey towards healthier connections and, honestly, a healthier sense of self, it often starts right there, recognizing the patterns and taking ownership of what is actually yours to control. So maybe something to think about. What patterns in your own life, your own reactions, might be ready for a little shift, just something to mull over.
Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive today. It was a lot to unpack.
Yes, a really big thank you for spending your time with us. We really appreciate it. If you found this deep dive helpful, maybe consider liking it or sharing it with someone you think might benefit. And please leave us a comment. We genuinely love hearing your thoughts. It helps us figure out what insights are most valuable to you.
And remember, there's always more to explore, more layers to understand when it comes to how we interact. We really hope you'll come back and join us for our next deep dive.
Until then, take good care of yourselves.
Goodbye, everyone.